Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 49ers game day podcast in action, inexplicably,
yep.
Impossibly. Jake, I'm gassed.
I spent about, 8 hours at the 49ers facility. Three of those hours were just like waiting for them to.
About 50 too many.
Yeah, just waiting for them to draft. I immediately forgot who they drafted.
Get out of USC.
Yes.
Name who's
a guy
as well.
Yeah, it's been, listen, it's been a long day. It's been a long day. I apologize to anyone who hears my dog licking water, drinking water right now. It's been a long, weird day. And we're here to break it down finally after, you know, whatever this was. I think the 49ers had a solid draft.
Yeah.
There were some things I loved, some things I was like pretty mad on. There was not really anything I totally hated.
Mm. I didn't find anything to be deeply egregious. I think that we're probably on
right.
The same
there. There wasn't like a Ty Davis Price, like what are right. we doing here? And then you try and give them the benefit of the doubt. And you're like, no, this doesn't make sense. Or a Cam Latu situation who, listen, I've yeah. been critical of Cam Latu plenty. Kyle Shanahan was pretty critical of him today.
lay that on me. What'd he say?
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan, you know, our guy, Eric Branch, he asked Kyle, you know, you didn't get a tight end in this draft. Mm-hmm. Basically, is that something you have wanted? And is, you know, Cam Latu the number two? Kyle goes, no, you know, we look at all of our tight ends. He hasn't been out there. We like guys to practice first.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
stunner.
Is fair. He hasn't really practiced, but he did have a training camp, you know, before.
Well, he did. Then they found an injury.
So,
hey, Cam, what's been bothering you? Yeah, that'll do.
Yeah. They did just sign an undrafted tight end.
You got a name?
His name is Pline. I think it's Mason
Washington?
Klein. Furman University.
Oh, you know what? I've watched him. I can see it.
Very tall. He's basically tall. Just a lob threat. He's 6'7", kind of moves decently well.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get drafted.
Yeah, and apparently the 49ers, you know, that's the guy they're going with. He could compete and
yeah.
theoretically win a roster spot.
6 foot so, six, three, no, not 300.
Yeah.
6 foot six, 250 pounds, 4.7940, 23, nope, maybe 24 years old. That was kind of my takeaway. These dudes be old.
Yeah, that was, they, let me just say, they had one player who did not transfer in college, and that was Renardo Green. Yeah. And he was a five-year player. I think the only player who played 4 years was Malik Mustafa.
That's good
Malik
to know.
Mustafa.
Thank goodness we only talked about him every episode for 3 months and
listen,
didn't have that right.
It's been a long draft process.
I just want to go bang, bang, bang. But here's what I want to do. I want to do it in reverse order.
Great.
And the most recent pick first. And let's just talk people through what we're thinking. 251, they go Tatum Bethune out of Florida State. He's a linebacker. And when you watch the tape, you see a guy who is looking to kill. He has murder on his mind.
Yep.
And the football field is the area which he extracts his vengeance for crimes committed against his family on the planet. You cannot teach that kind of tenacity. And I think back to a guy coming out of the University of Arkansas who didn't have a great 40 time. There were a lot of questions about his ability to adapt his game from the safety position. But they said, hey, you know, when he gets downhill, he can really do something. This guy is a little different. But if you're looking for somebody to replace Dre Greenlaw down the line, you could do a whole lot worse than a dude who is clearly cut from the same cloth of insanity as Dre Greenlaw.
Totally. And it's funny, he specifically, when we talked to him, he shouted out Dre Greenlaw as somebody that he watches. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you know, one of the physical knocks on him just from a size standpoint, because, you know, I watched a lot of Florida State, but I was not locked in on him. There's a lot
yeah,
of
he didn't stand
linemen.
Out like that. Yeah.
Right. And that was just a good, to be fair, like we love Florida State guys, but he's a guy that is, from testing standpoint, really undersized. He plays way above that. Like he plays really, really physical where I'm like, this guy's under 6 foot and, you know, like.
Yeah, you would have thought he was 6'2", 245.
Genuinely. Like he plays above his weight. Dude, he
same thing with Mustafa, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing.
They got a type.
Yep. At 251, I think you definitely could have used a linebacker. 251 in general, I think as long as it's not the most unathletic player you've ever seen with no production, I'm fine with whatever you do. Doesn't really matter.
That USC defensive end that who took him?
Oh, Birds. Was it Solomon Bird?
Yeah.
Insane.
You sent me his RAS when it happened, and it was all like, it was all red. Everything was red. It was USC red. And that's I put on just a highlight, not even like good tape. I just put on a highlight tape. And on his highlight tape, there's a snap of him against Stanford where the ball has been snapped and it's in the mesh point and hasn't come out of his stance yet. It's like you just drafted that guy.
That
was on his highlight. That was the third highlight. He killed it against Nevada, though. So, you know, that actually translates.
Bethune, real quick, just to finish on him.
Yeah.
I watched just a tiny bit after he got drafted. He was relatively fluid. Like he flipped his hips better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
In coverage. Yeah. It's hard. Seems like a character guy that Johnny Holland absolutely fell in love with and vice versa.
He said
they just talked about life and whatnot.
Yeah.
And at 251, go for it. Great program.
Yeah, fine. That's where I'm at. I'll always take a guy who is a trusted veteran on a Florida State team. That was the going back and watching it now with understanding what happened. That was the best team in college football. They would have won the title if Jordan Travis had stayed healthy. I understand not putting him in. I don't disagree with not putting him in. But my God, the talent. And Mike Norvell.
They were so sick.
Mike Norvell might be the best coach in America right now with Nick Saban. I mean, I know Kirby Smart's right up the street from him, but like, God damn, can Mike Norvell.
I wanted to draft every FSU guy. Like, that's right. They were all two. So well prepared.
You got two. Yeah, they played something close to a pro.
And the Rams got two.
Yeah, well, the Rams absolutely aced the draft again. Except for one guy. But legitimately, like, it looks like they're looking at our notes.
Yep.
Round six, 215 overall, Jarrett Kingston. Not going to lie, didn't spend a lot of time with Jared Kingston. Didn't think he was going to get drafted, but had spent enough time to know that he could move and that there was a possibility because he could move. And the 49ers said, hell yeah, there's a possibility we're taking him because this guy can move. And
yep,
when he gets his hands on you, if he's moving forward, you're moving backward. Great run blocker, was in the worst offense in America, whose quarterback somehow went number one overall. Watching him after the fact, trying to get a little bit more info for the notes, I texted you this. I can't stand Caleb Williams. I can't stand him. You posted on X just a screenshot of the splits. And it's
What is that?
They're the worst.
These guys are like a full yard apart. The center, the guard, tackles are a full yard apart.
This is college football, Jake. And that was the worst coach team in America. I have consistently painted with a broad brush when talking about USC's offensive line and saying that they were egregious. Now going back on it, the other four guys were egregious, and this guy was actually kind of holding his own. And that's not just the highlight. I mean, I put on all snaps. The game against
Notre Dame?
Notre Dame was a good, really good game for him from what I saw, but I only saw the highlights of that. They played somebody in the Pac-12 again, brain, no work. It was a high quality opponent. I'm pretty sure it was Oregon. Dan Lanning, they're going to put together a great defensive game plan. They have really good defensive players, probably underrated defensive players, all things considered, and good ends. And I thought he handled his business in that game. Whereas everybody else might as well have been standing. They might as well have been walking on their hands while playing offensive line. So
yeah,
I like the pick at six, even though I'm kind of shocked that he got picked at all.
Yeah, Kingston is a guy that I don't think he was on the ESPN board. Couldn't find him there. But
did Mel Kiper have an emotional breakdown?
I mean, listen, Mel Kiper's whatever.
Here's a kid. Here's a kid. Here's a kid. Here's a kid.
Yeah.
Here's a kid.
But here's it. So where I was at that spot is I like Bo Limmer out of Arkansas.
That's right.
So the Rams took him two picks after.
That's right.
And these guys are in super similar molds, like top tier athletes. Yeah. I didn't realize Limmer actually has slightly shorter arms than Kingston, who has short arms as
is. That's right. And so, the Niners don't really care about that much.
They don't that much. I think that, so I'll start with the negative with Kingston is those arms. I think because they are shorter, sometimes he can be a tiny bit tentative and not wanting to put them out there in the run game when he's in space. Mm. And when he's at the line of scrimmage and he's in pass protection, sometimes he can throw them a little bit too early. It's sort of like, I think he's aware of it. And he said, when we talked to him, he doesn't have the length to play tackle. He said that specifically. So he's a guy that was aware that he's like, I don't have the longest arms, which is a good thing. He's self-aware.
The 49ers are like, bet. You sure about that? We're going to put you, right. We're going to put you a tackle. We're going to play you a tackle.
They mentioned that he could maybe play tackle.
The San Francisco 49ers, I don't think, when it comes to offensive line, give a flying fuck about the upper body. They just want to make sure your feet move and that you are standing in the right spot. And you know what? Given the state of offensive line play in this world, not a bad thing to just rest your laurels on.
I'm with you. And this guy moves. Listen, he moves.
Ooh, he can scoop.
Dude, I want him to be a little meaner in the run game. I think he has that. I think part of it is, again, as I mentioned, like, I think he's just, I don't want to lunge and not engage and then whiff and then put my running back in a bad position, which is pretty fair. But I think there are some times where it's like, drive this dude into the ground because I know it's in you. I'm interested to see how they develop him in that regard. Pass protection, I don't think he's like an elite pass protector, but he held his own.
He's
like,
fine.
I'm not worried about his anchor. I think he is.
I think he's got the tenacity to be a good pass protector if he doesn't have the body and his feet are going to be in good position.
Right. Right. I gave him a B plus. I should have given him an A minus, and I might change that. Like, he is at this stage in the draft.
Yeah.
Elite athleticism. You can see the fit. And, you know, the 49ers, basically where they came down on him and Limmer, is they had Kingston as a slightly better fit in their system. Mm-hmm. But they also, Limmer was pretty close. So at least knowing that I wasn't insane.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not going to lie to you, Jake. I didn't spend that much time on him, and I think we missed him. I think we got to do a bit of I don't know how we missed him because, I mean, I marked it in my notes. I forgot about it immediately after. I don't know when I marked it in my notes. It could have been 3 months ago. It could have been 48 hours. Like, I don't know. And we missed him. We should have talked about this guy on the show.
To be fair, like, without testing, there's no real way to know. Like these teams hadn't understand, like, they've got some insight on athletic. Yeah. So they know the athleticism stuff before they test.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously they have scouts and sources and all this stuff. So before that, it's like, he doesn't really pop on tape, but like, that's because the offense is a mess. And so you're like, I don't know what I'm even looking for here.
Yeah.
And he wasn't really hyped up as a prospect, but then you watch him and you're like, this makes sense. I get it.
It makes sense for them and like four other teams that are hardcore about the outside zone. And they know what? That's fine. And I'm sure that they thought that the Rams were going to take them. And the Rams are like, we might have taken. We fucking bet we would have. I'm really interested to see what happens when this guy actually gets some coaching. I think it could be pretty interesting because now he's about to get the best offensive line coach in the game after, again, being on the worst coach team in college football.
Yeah, one thing to come out of this draft, the 49ers were like, yeah, our right guard is a problem.
It was stunning to actually read the folks who are very plugged in with that sort of a thing. That's kind of a specific bandwidth of reporting. And you would have thought that Spencer Burford had died in a fiery car accident. This guy started the Super Bowl, folks. I still kind of believe in Spencer Burford. The 49ers do not.
He's got athleticism like... But some of the mental mistakes he made and some of the times where he couldn't anchor and just like he slipped a stunning amount was odd.
He just needs better cleats, Jake. If you just give him the cleats, he'll make it. No,
yeah,
I'm with you. But, I can understand trying to replace him. I get that. I'm just stunned that it was so direct.
Right. It's my Madden approach. I just take a bunch of interior offensive linemen every year because, you know, maybe they get hurt. You got depth. Great.
That's what build I would do with quarterbacks. And I am legitimately, we'll get to this a little bit later in depth. I'm a little bit peeved they didn't take a quarterback. They did not have a round five pick.
They did pick up Tanner Mordecai in as a UDFA.
Okay.
I'm not hyping him up. I'm just saying.
No, they needed a camp arm, and I will just do it now. Michael Pratt, who was the fifth best quarterback on my board. I liked Michael Pratt more than I liked.
Stunned how late he went.
More than I liked Bo Nix.
After round one. That was crazy.
Number 12 to 150. And as soon as the New Orleans Saints didn't take Pratt, I would imagine, as much as everybody is very insular, you just have to think, okay, Saints are going to take a quarterback. This guy was literally in their backyard in Tulane. Like, if anyone knows if Michael Pratt is good or not, it should be the Saints. The problem is the right. Saints also employ Dennis Allen as their head coach. So can we really trust anything that they decide? Like, Michael Pratt was an elite quarterback at a major program last year. Willie Fritz is the head coach of Houston because of Michael Pratt. And they lost one game last year. He didn't play in it. Otherwise, Tulane is playing in a New Year's Six Bowl. And yes, right. They had playmakers. Don't get me wrong. But that the show was it was the Michael Pratt show. And I forget where he ended up going. Absolute steal. I think it was like two. It was
he went late. I forget who it went to.
It was
honestly.
It was late.
I was in a blender down there.
I believe you. And listen, day three of the draft, legitimately one of the worst television products ever produced.
Brutal. Real quick.
Yeah.
Alex asking if there's some Aaron Banks skepticism. I think they're fine with Banks, but he's also a free agent next year, and I don't think they're going to pay him.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it.
They can't have too much depth at guard because it's not as if anybody in those spots is declaring from on high, this is my spot forever. I mean, John Feliciano was brought back. That tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, yeah, he did go to the Packers. 245 is criminal.
245 is preposterous, and to the Packers is a big problem. That, as much as when we talked with Ricky Pearsall, and we'll talk about him more, but we've already done a nice bit on him. With Ricky Pearsall, the reason the Niners took him at 31 is that they couldn't risk it, and they were so convicted in their decision that he was the man, the same way that I felt about it, the same way you felt about it, that they said, we're going to stretch a little, and we're not going to get cute with this because we cannot let the opportunity to take him pass. He cannot be the one to get away.
They're like, we have a dude here. Let's get him.
Why overthink this? Just go get him. Who gives a damn what anyone says? And then meanwhile, you and I are leading the brigade of this is a great pick. And now suddenly everyone's like, you know, I think this is a pretty good pick. I'm excited for a lot of the people who covered the 49ers on their first day to actually watch him play because he's a spectacular stallion. I will address Alex's current question. Let's throw it up on the screen. Dieter, breakdown of Cody Schrader. That would be the best running back in the SEC last year, Cody Schrader. He is a one cut and go, but does not have explosive burst. Just great vision, great tenacity, always finds the right running lane. I can understand why he didn't go drafted. I would have a very hard time imagining a world in which Cody Schrader does not exist in the NFL 5 years from now.
And the 49ers got him. So
I think that Elijah Mitchell and JP Mason are out of jobs because I think they got two running backs to replace them. One, they drafted in the fourth round. We'll get to him in a second. And the other one is Cody Schrader. The surprise about on this draft overall, I mean, legitimately stunning move. And this would be the one that if you really wanted to, you could take umbrage with.
Yeah.
Jacob Cowing, wide receiver, Arizona, 5'0", 160-0. Very productive in Jed Fish's offense. And Arizona, that's a pro-style offense.
Healthy, played a ton of games.
25 games, 175 receptions, 1,800 yards and 20 touchdowns, including 13 last year. Not much of a gadget player, but what he is a guy who will get open every single flipping time on the in-cutting routes and the out-cutting routes. It's kind of inexplicable, but if you play off coverage on this dude, he's going to win.
You can also just send him on a go route and at least test. He does have deep speed. Like, that's one area where
he's a steady runner in that when he's going, he doesn't slow down. He's like a distance runner. when he gets into his gate, it stays at that gate. There's no deceleration. It's the end of Ronnie Bell. Let's all pour one out for Ronnie Bell.
Or just Danny Gray.
Danny Gray's definitely done. Trent Taylor is going to be hanging around for training camp, but he's not going to last very long. And this, by the way, is the Juwan Jennings replacement. And we talked about Ricky Pearsall being the Deebo Samuel replacement. It's obviously not a one-to-one, apples-to-apples replacement. There is no other Deebo. And frankly, there's no other Juwan Jennings. But their issue with Juwan Jennings is you can slide him out at X. He's not very good over there. You have to scheme him open. He doesn't get open on his own. And Kyle's kind of tired of scheming dudes open. And so he's going to go get a dude who just gets himself open. Now, does he have the body and the frame to be able to do that effectively in the NFL? Right. But if you're playing him only in the slot, and the 49ers went to a lot more spread concepts last year with Brock Purdy, and I would imagine they're going to double down on that again this year, now that they've had a full offseason to actually work with him while he can throw a football, I think they're going to be a lot more of a spread out team. I think they're going to be a lot more of a 10 personnel team at times, perhaps 11 with Kittle going into the slot. I think they're going to look a lot more like Kansas City's offense moving forward. And Jacob Cowing would have a role in that offense probably as soon as this year.
For sure. He's interesting. He's interesting, right?
It's a stretch,
like,
right?
I think he's a stretch. I don't necessarily know if this spot's a major stretch. It's less the position. It's less the value at this spot, mm-hmm. and more like, could you have gone for a tight end? Could you have taken something that is more pressing? I think where the 49ers come down, I have a little bit of questions about his, I think he can beat you on a slant and just go. And that's going to be
I don't think he's a great yak guy. I didn't see any good yak stuff off of him. I think he's a possession receiver who's going to get open on short and intermediate routes.
Right.
There are worse things to have.
I also do think I'm just higher on his deep speed. But I think that is an element where they've been looking for like Marquise Goodwin since 2017, and they tried it with Danny Gray and it didn't work. And I think this is another sort of attempt at that. And he has punt return ability I think he only returned 18 punts. But Lynch, I think, spoke very highly of his punt return ability. So he's a guy they think. Here's the thing. They invested heavy in special teams.
Boy, did they. They did it in free agency, and then they went out and got a bunch of dudes who can return punts. They will never be caught lacking again in that department, because they ate it last year in that department. They didn't trust Ronnie Bell. Ray Ray was not good, and they kept giving him the job. I mean, you go down the line, they hated it. They hated it, and they're never – much like the Atlanta Falcons saying, we're never going to be without a quarterback again, the 49ers said, we are going to have punt and kick returners coming out of our ears.
Yeah.
Not a bad place to be.
And they're going to stash Trent Taylor on the practice squad, who, that's like, the veteran, by the way, he's actually had decent punt return numbers the last 2 years with Chicago and He'll Cincinnati.
This is Trent Taylor's original job with the 49ers was to be a punt and kick returner who never returned the ball. Just catch it. That's how bad it was. Right. And it really hasn't gotten much better since they got him out of town.
Yeah. To finish on Cowing.
Yeah.
Interesting. The slight size is tough. They clearly were sold on this mysterious corner who visited them and said he was the toughest cover. But you do see it on tape, like he kind of just glides past guys. I have a little bit of question about him, whether like trying to get a whip route or something that's more complex than just like one or two moves. But he seems to win, and man, the production was really there. So we'll see. He is the guy I'm obviously most dubious about. But if you're going to get rid of Deebo next year, very, very likely, and you might probably lose Juwan Jennings. So
you will.
And your depth is pretty weak. So it's fine. Whatever.
There are worse places to be. That said, given the general state of the wide receiver position at the college level, you could probably do it. I think that more than anything else, this signals somewhat of a scheme departure or an adaptation of what we know the 49ers to be on offense. And I think he is kind of the canary in the coal mine for this. And if you look at everybody else they drafted, you can kind of make the same case. So let's talk about the pick that I have to imagine they were the most excited about. And they were so excited they traded 2 5th-round draft picks to get them. But I have heard some folks, and I am not as high on this gentleman as you are, but I think Isaac Garendo, I believe it's Isaac.
Isaac.
Might be Isaac.
Maybe it's Isaac. Isaac is kind of dope. I think it's Isaac.
Isaac Garendo out of Louisville. Let me just throw a stat at you here. There have been two players at 220 pounds or more who have run sub 4.35 40-yard dashes in the last 20 years. You want to name one of them?
Isaac Garendo.
Okay. Who's the other one?
220.
Who is the biggest, fastest dude you can imagine in the NFL currently?
Oh, he's still in the league.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and you know him.
It's not Mostert. Mostert's not that big.
He's not that big. Who's the biggest, fastest dude you can think of?
Is Derrick Henry? Derrick Henry's not that
no,
fast.
No, he's not that fast.
These are terrible guesses. I was thinking running back.
The biggest, scariest dude in the league.
That's wild.
The legitimate alpha of physical freaks at any skill position, DK Metcalf, and Isaac or Isaac Garendo. Those are the two guys in the last 20 years.
Nuts.
So when you watch him go one cut and go, that's a real go. That's an insane go. He has brilliant straight line speed, and he has the weight to where he's not somebody who you have to worry about not being able to hold up. This is something close to a perfect pick.
Dude, perfect. So, with Garendo, he was a guy, he started at Wisconsin. You ask yourself, why did he have almost no production? Had a lot of hamstring injuries early, had a Liz Frank injury, which is scary, but then got healthy. John Lynch was like, those were early in his career. Basically, we've done a lot of work on his medical. They were deep on Garendo. And
by the way, one of the few players that leaked out of 49-49 that they loved. I mean, the other one being Rosengarten. But like Garendo, 2 months ago, people are like, they love Isaac Garendo.
As they should. Like he is, and Shanahan, it's funny. Like sometimes Kyle's like, yeah, there's a lot of traits, you know, whatever. We asked him about Garendo. He's like, he's really fast. He's like, he's so excited. He's like, he's so fast. And he's
Raheem Mostert in a bigger body.
Right. Like he's physical, and he's a guy that, like, I think he might be their number two running back day one.
No question. You know? Elijah Mitchell no longer has a job.
It's something where we talked about Tyrone Tracy Jr. Like this guy has this same sort of physicality. Like he has a pass catching element too. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's elite in that regard, but he does have it.
Good pass pro as well.
Yeah. Like he's just a very good running back. I think honestly, the main concern is that, you know, lack of production, but it's that the 49ers have whiffed on third round running backs and a fourth round running back. And the trade up, you go, oh no, you know, have we done a Joe Williams again? You know?
Yeah, I understand that, but I think that they are correct in their conviction on this guy because he's such a great scheme fit and he fits their needs so specifically. And let's be very clear about what their needs is. They needed a healthy Elijah Mitchell. They're never going to get that. It's impossible to happen moving forward. He's doing the reverse Willy Wonka. Right. He does one step forward, two steps back every time. I mean, it was legitimately comical every Monday on the press conference calls where they'd be like, yeah, Elijah Mitchell came in. He gave us about 10 carries, really provided what we needed. He's going to be out for about 2 weeks with something.
And it's brutal.
It's a brutal sport.
That rookie year was glorious.
It's what happened.
He was injured like the whole year.
That's what I'm saying. So here's, let me be specific about what Elijah Mitchell is to the 49ers or was to the 49ers and what Isaac Garendo will be. This is a guy who in November, December, and January is going to come onto the field for an entire series and just run directly behind Trent Williams. That is his job. He has no other job. Now, if you want to flex out Christian McCaffrey and put him in the backfield to do a little bit of a pass pro and leak, you can do that. You're probably not going to. What you're going to do is say, Christian, you're tired. You've been working like a dog all game. Let's let the bowling ball at 220 pounds with his 4.3 speed go do some work, and you stay healthy over here because we're going to be moving you all around when we really get to crunch time. But between now and then, we need to control the game. You think about those drives that Kyle Shanahan loves with about 6 minutes to go in the second quarter where he's like, we got to drive this thing all the way down. That's Isaac Garendo time, baby. Offensive line, let's go. Pin the ears back. Isaac Garendo, when you see the hole, hit the hole. And by the way, he's onto the third level by the time anyone gets around to defending him. It's a perfect pick. He's a massive upgrade over Elijah Mitchell. And as you said, Elijah Mitchell was a very, very good player for the San Francisco 49ers when he was healthy.
Let me go back to one thing you mentioned. I think this cannot be stated enough. A few things about their wide receivers they drafted, about basically everything they did is to go back to the Super Bowl. What happened? They had McCaffrey had been like dealing with the calf thing for a while. He powered through and he fumbled and he had a rough game after that. Debo, who's dealing with a shoulder injury, was like a shell of himself. Those guys were worn down by the end of the year. That's Debo could not separate from man coverage.
Not a chance.
That was a monumental problem. And then the other problem, right guard. They had massive breakdowns, the whole right side of the offense, really. So what they did is they get help on that side to beef up all of that. They get more athletic there. They get size. And then you get Ricky Pearsall, you get Jacob Cowing, guys who, like, listen, at the, like, Debo and Christian McCaffrey are probably going to get hurt throughout the year. And even if they don't, the 49ers are going to want them to be healthy at the end of the year. You can rotate those guys out a little bit more throughout the course of the season. Because the 49ers control Debo's contract, like, they don't necessarily need to give him all the touches because he's already going to be pissed.
He was already getting more limited touches. The issue was that you get halfway through the season and then he's out and you realize nobody can actually do what it is that he does. Not that anyone could, but they couldn't even put up a reasonable facsimile of it, which is why I was more in on like a Chiron Tracy Jr. because in theory, he could do a lot of the same stuff Debo does. But if you're viewing Debo as strictly a Z receiver, and anything beyond that is gravy. And by the way, once you get Christian McCaffrey, you didn't really do a lot of the wide back shit that they did. That was under Jimmy Garoppolo.
He's a little redundant.
You need a Z receiver. And I'm just going to say this, and it's going to come across weird, but when you think about it, I'm telling you, I know you'll agree with this, but anyone in the audience, it's going to come across as weird. Ricky Pearsall is a better wide receiver than Debo Samuel.
That's not to say
he's a better football player, but he's a better wide receiver.
Watch the Super Bowl. Debo was in a body bag against Trent McDuffie. I'm not saying that. Listen, as somebody
there was a couple games like that throughout the season. Cleveland put him on the sidelines, but yeah.
As somebody who proselytized about Debo Samuel's ability in like 2021 and 2022, and where I was just in the,
It was as spectacular a football player as we've ever seen with our own eyes.
It was one of the greatest postseason runs I've ever seen. It was astonishing. I was in awe. I was in awe of how Debo carried the 49ers through the playoffs, did everything for them, where they truly
You're right. Tucker with a hell of a cooler
Debo carried them through that postseason where they even, I think that was the postseason where they ran it on that like third or fourth and seven in Green Bay, and Debo got it, and it wasn't blocked well, and Kyle's like, just give it to Debo. I don't care.
There was no other offense. By the way, Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback at the time, should be noted.
Debo's an awesome player. He is like a true football dude who, when he's on, like he is one of the top 10 just most dynamic players in the league when he's on. But
no doubt,
Debo massively struggles to separate against man coverage, and he's always had a lack of route running polish. Ricky Pearsall, you've got possibly the most polished true receiver in the draft. Maybe that's outside of the
top two.
Yeah, that's true.
Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers are something close to perfect prospects. Perhaps the two best wide receivers.
The guy the 49ers could have possibly drafted that had that route running polish with high athletic upside. Pearsall can beat man coverage in a way that Debo can't. Like, he just knows how to play the position extraordinarily well.
Okay, let's talk about Isaac Garenda. But it speaks to, they were very acute in where they attacked. Now, again, they didn't get a future left tackle. And what that tells me is they believe Trent Williams is playing not just one more year, but at least two more years. We'll see if that comes to fruition. He's got 3 years of playing time left on his contract. They think he's going to play two more and they'll address it next year, if not, later than that. So that's interesting because they were saying a quite different story going up to the draft. Now, was that a smokescreen? I guess so. And so then you look at tight end and you say, well, you didn't get anybody. I don't think this kid from Furman can reasonably be expected to come in and be tight end number two. So I think we're going to be looking at what dudes are on the street. Like, where can you get anybody?
Eric Sauber. That's their number two right now.
It's a real problem.
I don't know. Does he do anything for you?
Maybe. And I would have, Kyle would never have given this away, but I'm starting to think that they don't want a second tight end. One, because they've never dealt with it at all, just in general. We've been begging for this for 5 years now, 4 years. But beyond that, they just went out and got two guys who are better in the slot than they are on the... I think Pearsall as a Z receiver in tight splits is elite. Don't get me wrong. But if you wanted to really unleash him, you put him in the slot in a three-wide set or a four-wide set. Same thing with Cowing. You put him in a three-wide or a four-wide. Now you also have Juwan Jennings. You have three elite-level slot receivers. And by the way, you could flip Brandon Ayuk in there. You could put Deebo Samuel. You have a lot of guys... I wouldn't be surprised if they are in a lot of three wide receiver sets moving forward, which effectively negates any need for a second. I don't think you'll ever see two tight ends on the field at the same time. Full stop. Because Kyle Juszczyk still needs to have a role. You can't have two tight ends and Kyle Juszczyk. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I think they're going to go to a lot more of a Ram style offense in the early days of McVay, something closer to the Chiefs this past year.
That's important to remember. Like, there's, people love the term the Shanahan offense. And what is the Shanahan offense? It's an offense that started with outside zone and just evolves. Like, yeah, it's called the Shanahan offense because Kyle started it and there's all of his disciples. But what they value the most and what makes them special is they're adaptable, they're intelligent, they understand trends in the league and how to attack defenses. And they try and get ahead of them, or they react to them and they adjust accordingly. That's what makes those coaches special.
They haven't changed their offensive line identity in the least bit, and that's thoroughly evidenced by their picks, one of which we'll get to in a moment here. But I do think they're changing their ideas about what it is they want to do in the passing game and the running game.
Yep.
And you know what? Frankly, it's a refresh that's probably a bit overdue, because they are all in on Brock Purdy, and Brock Purdy does not run the same offense, or should not run the same offense,
right,
that they ran under Jimmy Garoppolo, Brian Hoyer, and Nick Mullins.
And that's something we talked about going into this draft, and something I thought about asking Lynch and Tariq Ahmad and all these guys is, like, you know, how much did Brock affect it? And they're not going to really say. They're going to be like, yeah, you know, we're building around Brock. But, like, they invested in players who can make Brock Purdy sustainable. And if they want to, like, clean house a little bit next year, they've already replenished some of the positions they're going to need to do it at, so they can match Purdy's timeline.
No question about it. I imagine this was your favorite pick, perhaps of any team in the draft overall. 124, Malik Mustafa, Wake Forest.
I love him. I think in my book, he was the number two safety on my board. Yeah. I thought this was a terrible safety class.
That we agree with.
There was Javon Bullard out of Georgia. Outstanding. Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota.
Nope.
And Cole, he, you know, whatever. And Cole Bishop out of Utah. But Mustafa.
You really didn't like Cameron Kitchens, did you?
No, I really, listen, I saw some of the highlights. I get it. He took so many plays off and was responsible for so many explosives, just not putting in effort. Yeah. The Rams took him. Like, I get it. And because the Rams took him, it'll probably work.
Yeah.
But I saw some true red flag, don't draft anywhere concerns in his tape. But Mustafa truly, like, shot out of a cannon on every play. You know, you could say there's some coverage concerns, but you're going to say that about most college safeties that didn't go to, like, Georgia or an elite program. I think he actually has plenty of range and instincts to play coverage.
I think his range is dramatically underrated. In particular, he's somebody who is going to fire down in the run game. Think about college offense. It's all RPO. So he's firing down, trying to fill a gap. His ability to swing his hips around and recover as a safety is, like, downright preternatural.
It's
when he does
insane.
Not have elite speed or athleticism by any measurable metric, he is always in position. His recoverability and his ability to adapt to the play that's happening behind him is insane. And given where I think he'll play, which is strong safety, perhaps even box safety for a cover three defense, I don't know what more you could possibly ask for. This is something Ricky Pearsall was something close to a perfect pick, if not a perfect pick. You cannot give him a lower grade than that.
Right. Also, by the way, Mustafa does have explosion and have speed. He doesn't have like the top speed, but he ran a 4.54. Like the guy can move. He had a 41.5-inch vertical. Like he's an athlete. So
and when you have and when you have even it's not elite athleticism. I don't care. The number one thing that you're looking for with the safety is instinct. Does he feel the field? Does he see it? Same thing with quarterback, right? Does he understand where stuff is happening? Is he accurate in his decisions? Does he feel the game, see the game? Safety is our destiny in the NFL. I feel very confident putting the fate of my team in the hands of Malik Mustafa.
Totally. With safety, you're right. It's like, does a guy, when he's watching in the run game, does he wait too long and get washed out by a pulling guard or a guy moving up to the second level because he's not reading the play right? Or does he trigger, get around a block, and go make a play? Mustafa does that. The guy that the 49ers, like everyone linked them to, which I'm sure they had interest, like Sione Vaki, who people were like, oh, could it be him? Like the guy made so many, and don't want to just like rip on this guy, but the difference in Mustafa and that guy is that Vaki would take terrible angles, wait too long. He was tiny and he'd get washed down. Mustafa's not like a large
like a lion
guy.
Already.
He's wide, but he would get down there, make plays. He was my highest graded pick for the 49ers, a guy I mocked them to multiple times. Just love him as a player. And he, in the way he talked, like, I think he's got a good head on his shoulders.
With him and Jair Brown, the 49ers are in a really, really good spot at safety. And you're going to get Talanoa Hufanga in there.
Yeah. You got all those guys, and you can have Hufanga play around the line of scrimmage. They did miss Hufanga's blitzing ability last year.
Yes.
Having him around the line.
Mustafa's great, but he's not. Mustafa's an impact player at all three levels. He's no Hufanga when it comes to blitzing. If you want to use I'll throw something your way.
Big Nickel?
Go back to Big Nickel. And beyond that, here's what I want. Big Dime.
Ooh.
Free safeties. And think about, okay, well, who's that replace on the field? Because Big Nickel is you have a nickel in the slot, or you have a safety in the slot instead of a nickelback. Okay, nickelback, it might be a safety, it might be a corner, whatever. That was Big Nickel. And you can only get away with that because you had elite athletes in DJ Reed doing it. They don't have that. They don't. Now, I don't want D'Amador Lenore coming off the field as a nickelback.
Agreed.
I think he's very, very good at that. And you have
your
coverage
there. Stay at nickel.
Here's what I think. The 49ers have one linebacker they can trust to start the season. And if you go to Big Dime and you play Talanoa Hufanga at the position that he should be playing at, which is linebacker, I think you can get away with it. I really think you could get away with it. So I don't think it's going to happen. But now having three very high-quality safeties, three of which, Hufanga's still young.
It's Brandon Staley. He loves safety flexibility. Like he might do some weird stuff.
Love it.
Sorry. It's Nick Sorensen.
Nick Sorensen's defense. Listen, we all know who's running the shadow government, which we were all over, by the way. We need royalties on that one. Can we talk about Dominic Pooney? Dominic Pooney flavor on us. And he's out of Kansas. He was announced at the draft as a guard. He was listed as a tackle in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
The more I watch him, I haven't come around all the way. I didn't really like the pick. I understand the pick. That doesn't mean I like it. And maybe that's just my MIZ bias here against the hated KU Jayhawks, who, by the way, outstanding football team this past year. Not as good as my team, but outstanding football team. When I think about guard, tackle, I'm watching him and I'm thinking, here's your center. Here's your next center. I think he could be really good at that position. But ultimately, the versatility is what makes him valuable to San Francisco and made him the 86th overall pick.
I think when the 49ers look at him, they said, I think what they were looking at is, okay. And they talked about it at tackle. When we talked about, like you said, Trent Williams, they think he's going to play two more years. I think part of it, they liked a lot of the top tackles. And after that, they said, we like two guys. We like Roger Rosengarten and Caden Wallace out of Penn State. And I'm sure the list was more comprehensive.
There's well, I'll tell you guys. Who they didn't like. They didn't like Kingsley Suamatia because they were on the clock and he was on the board and they said, nah, and traded him. They effectively traded him to Kansas City, which, by the way, might be something they very much regret down the line, because I'm very high on Kingsley Suamatia, and him going to Kansas City is somehow now post-fact validation that I was right about him. But they decided against it.
Yeah, or it's something where their grade was lower on him. I bet they had some, you know, level of interest, but clearly not at that spot, and that was his spot.
That was the last reasonable future starting left tackle, and clearly they just didn't agree that that was his. That's where he was going to get.
And I really am interested, when the Rosengarten pick happened to Baltimore, did they think, we talked about this in the media room, like, Rosengarten doesn't sort of strike you as like a Baltimore tackle. It feels like they want like a more physical imposing, but they also just take good players. I wonder if the 49ers were just truly okay with that. And they said, listen, we are fine with Renardo Green here, and we are fine with Roger Rosengarten, and whichever one comes to us is fine. You know, given what they need at tackle, I wonder if they were a little surprised. I don't know.
They traded up to get him. It should be noted. They did. Yep. So I would imagine that they went into day three with about 5 to 10 guys circled. And a lot of those guys probably came off the board very early because, hey, you know, you gotta like the guys who are early, but you know, if they drop to you, you're going to live with it. I think probably Renardo Green and Dominic Pooney were roughly rated the same level. I think they were both round three, early day three picks. The Niners don't give a damn about that kind of stuff. They just don't. Right. They don't want to be held lacking the way that they did with Rosengarten. Now, should they have traded up and just gotten them? Sure. But I think that they didn't expect Baltimore, as you sort of noted. I don't think they expected Baltimore to take him.
That's the main thing I was interested in. Lynch was like, yes, we did like Roger. It's interesting. And everyone seemed to know that, which is why he went exactly one spot.
There were two guys, Isaac Arendo and Roger Rosengarten, that everyone was in cahoots about.
Right. So with Pooney, I get it. I don't necessarily think he's a super high ceiling guy. But I think what this draft showed you is they are valuing guys who day one, this guy's not a project. Like, he has got really solid size. He has an ability, like, he's got long arms, and he has an ability when he like latches onto you. He puts some guys in the ground because I think they're surprised by how long his arms are and how strong. And he'll like send a guy flying and really, really create some space in the run game.
He moves very fluidly, even for someone who doesn't have elite athletic traits.
Right. And he has good side-to-side movement traits, which is kind of what you need.
Especially if you're going to play the interior, as he is almost certainly going to play.
Right. He's, you know, I don't think he has a great anchor. He's like, you know, a little tall and
he gets iffy sometimes.
Can get a little high, in his stance, which I'm not a massive fan of. But he also, I don't think, allowed a single sack.
No, he's not bad. Like, he's not bad. He gets a little handsy on the interior. I think he'll get some holding penalties.
His hands are quick. Like, he recovers, and he's got enough quickness to recover. Yeah. So I think, listen, like, is this guy going to be an all-pro guard? Probably not. But is he maybe your starting right guard and also, like, swing tackle cover? Probably, right?
In an ideal world, he's your backup at all five positions going into next year.
You could do
a whole lot worse.
He's your Daniel Brunskill replacement, you know?
That's a great comp, because it seems to me as if both of the offensive linemen they took in this draft are just Colton McKivitz-y.
Right.
There's no nice way
they
to
love
that.
A guy who we're like, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? I don't know. We'll find out.
I mean, and that's great if you're taking him on day three, because it fits your scheme and you can take a flyer. You're getting round three to take a guy like that is a bit rich, and it hasn't worked out with everybody, right? Nick Sakelge is a guy like that. Well, have we ever seen Nick Sakelge actually play football? Not really. So and he was probably going to get cut before his arm exploded.
Yeah, Brock Purdy's roommates.
Well, now Brock Purdy has a new roommate because he got married. I'm not sure if you heard about that. Congratulations to the
Purdy. Congrats. Congrats. That's, yeah.
Cornerback is the hardest, well, second hardest position to evaluate coming into the NFL draft. I would argue safety is more difficult, but you know, you had a good read on safeties this year, and your read was they're all shit, regardless, except for Malik Mustafa and Bullard out of
I mean, the amount of safeties, I was just like, ugh. I couldn't bear to keep watching their tape.
The term is disgusted. You were disgusted. And this is how much of a glutton for punishment you are. This is the deep level of sicko. You kept watching them.
I guess.
You couldn't look away.
Yeah.
But cornerback was a really tough spot to evaluate this year. And specifically, this guy was very difficult to evaluate for a lot of people I talked to. This was someone that you highlighted for us, I would argue, first or second podcast we did.
Yep.
And you were about him, and I hadn't heard about him. And I really liked what you said. I watched more. I agreed with you wholeheartedly. This is an all substance, no flash sort of player. And as I talked to other people around the league about him, I got very, very disparate feedback. I had one person say he should be a first round pick. This guy is as solid as it comes. You're never going to have to worry about him for the rest of your life. And I had a lot of people say, I don't think they should draft him because there's no flash. If you're playing a cover three system, I don't give a damn if you catch a single interception. Just defend the pass. And this guy doesn't turn his head around very well and defend the pass, but he had 14 pass breakups last year. He was as good as anybody at staying connected to the receiver he was covering.
Yep.
I don't know. It doesn't need to be an athleticism.
Enough speed. He actually does. He's not like a top tier athlete, but he is athletic.
He was on every ACC receiver's hip every game, no matter what. And he had a brilliant game against the best wide receiver crew in the nation at LSU.
Yeah. A few things with Renardo Green. One, in my first mock draft, I had him at 63 to the 49ers.
I know.
I will say, I really quickly do have to pat myself on the back. In the last mock draft I did, I had both Green and Ricky Pearsall going to the 49ers. Mm-hmm. I also...
Don't tell me you took Ricky Pearsall.
55. Trading up, though.
No doubt. The only guy I know who legitimately mocked Ricky Pearsall to the 49ers at 31 is the man who cares about the draft the least. My 49ers beat writer, Cam Inman. The only guy.
God bless Cam.
God bless Cam Inman.
I know. Last pat on the back I had... In the second mock draft I did, I had Tanner Bordellini going to the 49ers at 117.
Where'd he go?
117 to the Colts. So,
and I got I how much do I want to give away here? Let's just say that I didn't like put anyone on to Tanner Bordellini, but there was some conversations in that direction talking about Tanner Bordellini and a general mutual admiration for Tanner Bordellini. And I think the Colts had themselves an exceptional draft as per usual.
Yes.
And if Anthony Richardson is anything, they might be playing for the Super Bowl next year. I'm not kidding. I'm all in on the Colts.
They've got talent. And anyway, I got
Renardo Green
as usual. Renardo Green. This is a guy, and it's funny. I was like, he's got a second to fifth round range. Green said, I had a wide range. I was second to, I think he said, fourth round. Like, that was the thing is...
He wishes.
You know, people were
there were people who hated him. There were people who hated him. But those people valued flash. Those people watch the Dallas Cowboys and think it's a good secondary. And there's a lot of that
Antonio Cromartie, you know?
That's right. Oh, well, he's not ball hawk. Does the guy who he's covering catch the flipping football? No. What more do you want?
They want like the Cameron Richardson who's, doesn't know how to really play the position, but is super long and super athletic, which is fair. With Green,
I get it.
The knock is that he's a little too handsy and he gets penalized for it. And there's times where you're like, let go. Also, Charvarius Ward, start of the season, super handsy, like kept racking up penalties. You sort of figure out what you can get away with as the season goes.
And as the season goes, they give you more leniency in that regard.
Exactly. And I just think...
Playoff basketball, baby.
Dude, when you watch, there's times where you watch, Malik Nabers release, and he's gone. And with him, with Green, you watch Nabers release, and granted, early in the year, whatever. I don't care.
It's game one.
It's still Malik Nabers. he goes outside. Green is mirroring him perfectly.
I didn't know what to do.
I think the 49ers are like talking about his versatility, that I think Mustafa makes it so safety's out of the question. It's nickel or outside corner. I don't understand what they're messing with. I think you keep D'Amador Lenore, who was excellent and actually improved his entire season, jumped up a level once he went inside.
Saved his career as a football player by going to the spot that you and I agreed in rookie minicamp he should be at.
Keep him inside, put Green outside. Green's going to compete and, in my opinion, win the starting job on the outside against D'Amador, and against Ambry Thomas, Isaac Yiadom, Rocky Sin, who is probably never going to actually be healthy, and Daryl Luter. And you've actually got a lot of corner depth now.
I like that guy out of New Orleans, though. Yasmin?
Yiadom. Isaac Yiadom. He's a good player. Really like him. He might start. He's a really good player.
I just don't see a world in which Renardo Green isn't starting for the 49ers when we're in crunch time.
He was one of the guys I just had the highest feeling and highest grade on. I think, you know, because of the Rosengarten thing, I didn't give him an A grade. And because there's, you know, maybe you could have gotten better value, I had him like a high B+, like as close as you can have to an A-.
Yeah.
But I love the pick. I just think he's so, so goddamn good at the game of football, which I think is perhaps the most important thing you can find.
The guy that when I watch him, I think about a lot is a player that I legitimately whiffed on way back in the day. And it's Tre'Varius White, right? Do I have that right? The former Buffalo cornerback?
Tre'Davious White.
Tre'Davious White. Apologies to Tre'Davious. Again, totally fried brain. I've done 14 hours of radio and toddler. And I mean, I almost didn't get to KMBR on time today because my wife, bless her heart, let me sleep in to the point where I almost didn't make it to the studio. First night I've gotten 8 hours of sleep in 3 months because I'm staying up late and watching draft prospects and then waking up to take the daughter to daycare. And the day that, you know, I probably should have set an alarm, I didn't. Regardless, Tre'Davious White, a little smaller. Certainly not somebody, and this is the thing that I have with Green. I don't think that he is, I didn't see him as a willing tackler. I didn't see him as somebody who's going to significantly help in the run game, and that's why anyone who says he should play the nickel sounds like a lunatic to me. Now, maybe he gets to camp and we see a different guy, but
I don't think that's his strongest element, but I did see him as a willing tackler and someone who played, you know, above the size and the frame that knocked him, which I don't really care about because I saw more than enough play strength to actually get downhill and make tackles.
He ate Malik Nabers alive. I don't really know what else we need to say about the guy. And by the way, you know, he's playing on the best team in college football, and he was a trusted player week in, week out for them. If you wanted more interceptions, you came to the wrong place. You know, Alex Simon in the comments right now with the astute observation, one that I've made multiple times over. This is an all substance, no flash draft. This is about, you want to build some depth, you get guys with high flipping floors. And that means in 2024, they can play a role for you. And that's 1 through 7 legitimately in the rounds. And then moving forward, a couple of these guys are going to pop. I think Green is your starting number 2 corner. Maybe even number 1 corner if he really produces as soon as 2025. I mean, 2024, he'll be in the mix to start. He's going to get reps early. They're going to give him every chance to do it. I'm interested to see if he can. So I'm interested to see what kind of defense they run. We have no idea. But if it's a true cover 3, he's perfect. If it's a true cover 3, he's perfect at that because he'll square you up. He'll get his hands on you. He might be a little bit too handsy. Guess what? Who they've said that about? Every great cover 3 cornerback ever. Every great cover 3 cornerback ever is breaking the rules. My dad still has conniptions about the legalized pass interference that the Seahawks were running back in the Legion of Boom days. That's what the 49ers want to run. He finds it abhorrent. The way that you felt about safeties, that's how he felt watching the Seattle Seahawks back then, because it was against the rules, damn it. And he's very big on rules. He's Catholic and a lawyer. It was a 2-for-2 punch there. So
respect.
Renardo Green, cover 3 corner. could not pick a better cover three corner. Maybe that's a telegraph of what it is they want to do. Maybe Malik is a telegraph of what they want to do. I mean, we are trying to read the tea leaves here a little bit. J.P. County tells us something different. There's something to be said there. Can we come back to our very special boy, Ricky Pearsall, who, boys, he's a character. He's a character. There's a lot there. By the way, two Arizona wide receivers taken in, not just University of Arizona. I'm talking two boys from the Valley of the Sun. Their quarterback is from the Valley of the Sun. I think it's coincidence, but it is kind of interesting.
It's not interesting. Listen, man, I think people who were dubious of Ricky Pearsall,
they've all come around now. They finally watched
him. They had not watched Ricky Pearsall. They did not know. They thought the 49ers drafted just some like slot receiver who's just going to return punts. Pearsall is incredibly well-rounded. He has elite physical traits. His arms are a little short, but he more than makes up for that with his leap and his catch radius. I think there are very few receivers I've ever seen who actually can track the ball the way he does and make catches at bizarre angles. Yeah. Like he can catch it over his shoulder. He can do anything. And he just understands the craft of receiving. Mm-hmm. And part of that is he's just worked on his game to get better as a route runner, to understand how to break away. There's questions about, you know, when hands get on him in the middle of a route, that's fair. I think he'll develop there. But he's a guy that is just so, so well-rounded as a wide receiver. Look at the reaction of C.J. Stroud, of every front office in the league.
Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk loved it. And again, when you're dealing with a lot of folks in the media who don't spend time on the draft, because to be fair, this is a sickos game. We're not advocating that people get into this line of work. At the same time,
yeah, it's strange.
It's weird. I mean, I'll tell you the amount of people who have commented on the binder. they weren't being malicious or mean, but they weren't being nice either.
Right. It's just being like your girlfriend is asleep and you're like on your computer, just like a little rat mole person. Just like, I think Dylan McMahon might be the perfect outside zone center. Like, that's what the draft is. That's what grinding this is. It's deranged. And we love it because we're not well. And that's what's important.
That was way too accurate in terms of how that went. You know, family's asleep. Me and the dog are going to go grind some tape. There have been more nights than I can count where I've done the extremely stupid thing of staying up until 3 a.m. because I just need another hit. I need another hit of that Tulane wide receiver.
Oh my God. You start going down a rabbit hole and I'm just like, yeah. And when I discovered Blake Watson out of Memphis, I'm like, that's, oh my right. God, we got at like 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, Dieter, we got a live one.
Like, you literally texted, we got a live one.
What are we doing?
Nailing it is what we're doing. And by the way, this can be yours for the very, very high price. We'll do consultancy. Just Sickos LLC.
I love it.
Pearsall is going to be fantastic. I appreciate that people are coming around on him now that they've watched it. And I a lot of the media narrative out of this, because there are so many folks in the NFL that want to turn the league into the NBA, where everyone is disgruntled and everyone's going to get traded, and it just creates good fodder that can get some clicks. Reality serving art, art serving reality. They're not trading either wide receiver, and they're keeping Ricky Pearsall. And here's why. Ricky Pearsall is an offensive weapon for you this year, and he had to be. He's a first-round pick. If he wasn't, that'd be a big problem. But he's going to be a weapon for you this upcoming year. You're not going to be playing Debo every snap the way that you have in the past and the way that they tried not to last year. On top of that, Debo injuries, that's a thing. It's going to be a problem, and you hope it's not. And for Debo's sake, you hope it's not, because he'll make himself a lot of money. I'll give you the full rundown. Anyone who's watching right now, the full rundown. I was fully under the impression that Debo Samuel was going to be a Baltimore Raven as of about 5-6 weeks ago. And I thought it was going to be for a first round pick, specifically Baltimore's first round pick. And I don't know where it fell apart. I really don't. But that conversation happened. I think that conversation, as far as I can tell, got very far down the tracks. And that had nothing to do with who they were drafting because it was so far ahead. But the Niners definitely knew this is a great wide receiver draft. They definitely had already watched some Pearsall, even though he was a little bit more of a late riser, and they admitted to that. He was a late riser for everybody. Let's be real. We all typecasted the guy.
Right.
And a lot of people were still typecasting him after he was selected. And until I remember specifically having, we both probably watched about 10, 15 minutes of him going into our wide receiver breakdowns. And I remember watching him certainly when he played at UF, because I watch a lot of SEC football. We both thought he was good. And he was probably a day two guy, maybe early day three. And you brought him up in the wide receiver breakdown and we threw on some tape and we just sort of live chatted through it.
Yep.
And as I said then, I'll say now, I'm hearing myself talk about this guy and I think I love him. Here are the two knocks on Ricky Pearsall. You nailed one of them already. There's some questions about what happens when he gets hands on him. Okay, I'll tell you why that's not a problem at all. The same questions can be asked about Deebo Samuel, except I think this guy has more answers than Deebo Samuel has. So when I say he's a better wide receiver,
I know he does.
I know you do. And I know you know. I'm talking to an audience here, Jake.
Right.
We all know know, Jake. Apologies. And so when jammed at the line of scrimmage, jammed when he's running over the middle, yeah, those are going to be concerns. He is not the biggest, he's not DK Metcalf. And so, by the way, DK Metcalf, you can knock him off a line very easily and he never gets back on it. There is no wartless wide receiver. They said the same thing about Cooper Kupp, but here's the deal. When you have a Kyle Shanahan or a Sean McVay, you don't get touched. They don't touch you because you're schemed open every single time. And if some defense can figure out a way to make sure that you are touched every single play and jammed every single play the way Kansas City did against Deebo Samuel, who had no burst off the line. As much as it was a shoulder injury, he looked washed in the legs, washed. No breakaway, but nothing. And you think about him against Detroit. There was no yak. He was just getting schemed open and catching the ball and taking a hit, which impressive.
Yeah,
but that's Ricky Pearsall's game. And so, okay, no, he isn't going to be the top guy when you get hands on him. By the way, I think you could say maybe the same thing about Malik Nabers, at least when you watch the Renardo Green tape, just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
And he was about as good of a wide receiver prospect as I've seen in 20 years outside of the guy who got taken above him. The other one that I have a concern about, this is my, and I am playing devil's advocate with myself because he is my favorite player in this draft. The only other concern I have is that he oftentimes when he is on a choice route, and by the way, he had a garbage quarterbacks at Florida
who tried to get him killed multiple times.
And almost did. I mean, I'm shocked that this man's spleen didn't explode at one point. And yet, guess what? He got the catch 14 yards and four dudes put a helmet into his sides.
He gets up quick too. Like he gets rocked and he gets.
This guy has the crazy through and through. My concern is on choice routes, he'll take the inside leverage instead of pushing on the outside leverage and going deep. And he has the ability to do that, but he so often didn't. My theory on this is, I have a shitty quarterback. Why should I go over the top? The ball's never going to come my way if that happens. And it's a choice route. So it's not like I'm a decoy here.
Right.
He's going from a quarterback with no accuracy and no ability to push the ball. Whichever quarterback it was at Florida, they didn't have accuracy or the ability to push the ball. He's going from an offense that was junk outside of, let's just get Ricky the ball, which was their only good play for about 8 out of 12 games. He's going from that to Kyle Shanahan's offense. I don't see a downside here. I don't, especially too when you consider and people go, oh, well, they passed up on Cooper DeJean. Yeah, that might come back and burn him legitimately. Cooper DeJean's a very, very good player. But he's also maybe a jack of all trades, master of none.
Right.
I would have liked to have found out.
Which is perhaps my concern with Pooney.
Yeah, but they like that more on the offensive line. They have shown time and time again they can make that work.
Yes,
I agree. I think that I think Cooper DeJean's best role, ironically, would have been kick and punt returner. And because I don't think he would have been the best nickel. And I think Renardo Green's a better outside corner than him, strictly. Now, Do I like the versatility of a Cooper DeJean? Hell yeah. Am I someone who, in the theater of the mind, in my own, can think of really fun ways to utilize him? Hell yeah. I'm sure Brandon Staley could have too. But you got a Ricky Pearsall right here who is something close to a perfect Z receiver for a Kyle Shanahan offense. You cannot pass it up. And you saw the run on wide receivers immediately after. Xavier Leggett, another guy who we thought was going to be in the 40 to 50 range for the Niners. They'd have to trade up to get him, but he'd be in the middle of that second round. Gone, end of the first round. Wide receivers again and again and again and again at the top of the second round. They knew it was coming. They kind of saw it was telegraphed that it was coming. The Niners knew there was no chance that anyone was going to let them have Ricky Pearsall, so they had to take him then. Agreed. And if you'd taken Ricky Pearsall at 37, you'd look like a genius. But because you took him six picks earlier when you just were on the clock, you're somehow bad. You know, you're doing a bad job. Get the hell out of here.
And based on every reaction, he's not going to be there at 37. Like, he's if only he a reach. He's only a reach.
And you would have had to overpay to get to 37 dramatically.
Right. He's only a quote unquote reach because people had him somewhere on their boards that, you know, was lower than where he went. But he is a damn good player. I want to talk about this for a quick second. Malik Washington, I think he's a pretty well-rounded. I don't want to say he's better than Malachi Corley because Corley's more athletic.
He went 184 to Miami.
But he's a little bit like Corley, and he's a short frame guy. I think his lack of size really hurt him. Mm-hmm. But I think 184 is like crazy low for a guy who can kind of do everything.
He's small.
He's smaller, and he doesn't have explosive speed. He has good speed, but not enough where you're like, oh. So I think that's the main reason, but I think he's a really well-rounded wide receiver who, like, you know, put him in the slot. If you've got like a weak wide receiver core, like he's gonna play for you and he's gonna be fine.
Well, I want to run through Miami's draft real quick here because I think they did an outstanding job overall. Chop Robinson at 21 is a really good pick. He's a really good pick, and he's exactly what they needed. They needed a possible game changer. He might not be this. He might not develop into this. Penn State has a weird habit of having really, really athletic players who are fine in college and then do nothing in the pros. They've also had another guy who is arguably the best edge rusher in the pros. So Chop Robinson is a brilliant pick for them at 21, exactly what they needed. They go with Patrick Paul out of Houston. I wasn't a big Patrick Paul guy, but scheme-wise, and by the way, like how Miami has shown us they want to go at tackle, how Mike McDaniel wants to be at tackle. They want big and they want fast. Patrick Paul hits those marks. Now, is he very technically sound? That would be a stretch to say. But he's very much of the Laremy Tunsil ilk, and they really liked Laremy Tunsil. Jalen Wright out of Tennessee is the running back. Yep. That's just going to work. Muhammad Kamara, one of your favorite guys in the fifth round. I mean, that's hell of a 1-2 with Chop Robinson and Muhammad Kamara coming off the edge.
That was a spot where, I think Brennan Jackson and Muhammad Kamara were there when they drafted Cowing.
Yeah.
That was part of the reason I scratched my head a little bit, but
on the Guerrero trade up, who, by the way, went at 124.
Not the Guerrero one, the Jacob Cowing selection.
Oh, right. Sorry, apologies.
But, you know, I asked Tariq Ahmad and RJ Gillen, who basically are the new co-number twos for the 49ers, who doesn't know, Ahmad is more based around NFL scouting. Gillen is, I think, their director of college scouting. I think it's
other way around.
Ahmad
is their college guy. Gillen is their pro guy. So Gillen was the main free agency guy, and Ahmad is the main.
Okay, the way they talked about it was the opposite today.
It's incorrect because one of them has been on pro personnel his entire career and the other one's been on college personnel's entire career. But I'm glad they're collaborative.
Yeah. And the point is, one, they threw him out there sort of to be like, if you guys are going to become GMs one day, like, you got to start talking to the media, put faces out there. It's a nice gesture by the 49ers. Mm-hmm. But I asked him, like, going into free agency, did you have a sense defensive end? Because they went up and they got Yetur Gross-Matos and they got Leonard Floyd.
Yeah.
And they paid a lot and we were kind of scratching our heads. And they saw a big gap between the top. They saw multiple gaps. And so clearly...
Oh, it's factual.
And it's true. It's a weird defensive end draft.
We had two guys who we liked in the middle rounds, or even there was a couple of guys that you could take a flyer on seventh round undrafted free agent. There were a couple of guys that we liked in the first and second separate. I mean, it's a great question. But other than Brennan Jackson and Muhammad Kamara, we didn't like anybody.
No,
at all.
No.
This is a very good question. He's never left. Ross Dwelly is forever, and
like a forever giant.
I mean, there's no comp as just a dude that they keep on the roster, even though he can't play football.
Hey, Dwelly had the best hands on the team. Not he just anymore. Happened to be extraordinarily slow and was not. Listen. Great character guy.
Yeah, again, everyone likes Russell.
Caught everything, but it's like tough when you can catch everything, but you can't separate.
At all.
It's just the reality.
And he no good longer guy. Has the best hands on the team when he is inevitably signed back. I want to quickly go over here the undrafted free agents that we know, because yep. This is just as important as anyone they drafted. A name that really strikes me here, obviously Missouri running back Cody Schrader, because M-I-Z. You got your meatball FAU defensive tackle Evan Anderson. It's gonna be fun while it lasts, Jake. We're gonna have a blast when he's out there.
Man,
he's
not the, making the team. The guy doesn't have burst, but like I love watching him play. You know,
and he's got something. Michigan center Drake Nugent, and
any Michigan guy, I'm fine with.
That's exactly where I'm at. If you were a Michigan offensive lineman, you have a spot on my team. And we'll figure it out. So I think that could be a really positive development. And I think Mason Plein is going to be the guy that we're watching probably with the most intent at rookie minicamp.
Yeah, Alex is, if this is your question, like, oh my God, this guy's a gem. Like basically this is who's got the highest upside. I'm trying to answer
that. That is question. How we described him. I cannot express to you how much time we've spent talking. We've spent more time talking about our meatball son from Florida Atlantic, the Boca Raton ball, than anybody else.
I also in the text message, Fabian Levette from FSU. I just think he's better nose tackle. To go back to Alex's question, who's the most like? I think right now it's the tight end, Mason Plein, just because he's
you like him.
I don't know if I like him. I'm just saying I've watched enough. I'm just saying, listen, when you look at his like breakdown, he played basketball for like the first 3 years of college and was like, oh, I'll go play football because I ain't making the NBA. I'm averaging 7.4 points a game
at Furman,
you know, at where was major, you know? So I think he's a guy who he's like basically best case scenario. He's a guy where you go, oh, he's actually going to catch everything in the red zone. Huge, giant red zone target. That's sort of this ephemeral thing that everyone talks about. Like, oh, what if we just got a tall guy?
Kansas City.
Sort of, you know, Jimmy Graham attempt. I think Mason Plein has the highest upside of these guys in terms of like, if he actually shows some athleticism and even the slightest bit, you know, ability to separate against contact, like he's got length and he has the athleticism to like leap and catch balls that truly no one else can get to. So that's something that's interesting.
He's a number two tight end. That's for sure. And if I had to make a bet on the guy who in this draft, and I'm going to remove their top five picks, because they felt very strongly about all of those guys. So we're talking Cowing, Kingston, and Bethune. I can make a case for all of them. I have a feeling that Bethune is going to be the holy shit guy. And I think he'll have an opportunity. And I don't think that you can teach the kind of murder that he has in his heart.
That's true.
I don't think he can do it. And when... it's just extremely evident, and it's interesting, of course, he said he watched a lot of Dre Greenlaw. Like, it's extremely evident that he is out to inflict pain, and you have to have a couple guys like that on your team. You know, the argument, you know, I'll tell you who's out of a job today. Danny Gray. He's out of a job. Ronnie Bell's fighting for his life.
When he was drafted, we were like, okay, he will be a vertical threat who doesn't really know what he's doing, and he is a might likely not work out.
It was a boomer bust possibility, and it busted. Full stop. Right. That's fine. Right. It's fine. It wasn't fine last year because you could have used another wide receiver, and this is something that's, again, we're going back to sort of the ethos of the draft, the reflections on the draft, the things that we learn. The 49ers put themselves in a position where they never had to play the boomer bust game again. They're just not interested in not having their guys be capable of playing in the NFL, even if it's just to be average or below average, but you can put them on the field. And they have drafted some guys in recent years that they can strictly not put on the field in good conscience. And they're not, they just weren't going to play that game again. And I know that we're in this post-draft glow and everything. Every single one of these guys is a high floor guy. I don't like a lot of their ceilings, but every single one of them is a high floor guy.
It's crazy. All of these guys, only Renardo Green, for those who missed, didn't transfer. All of them were transfers.
Yes.
Except for Renardo Green.
They all had to fight and scrap and claw a little bit to get some playing time at the college level.
And all of them played at least 4 years, most of them five. And part of that's the pandemic. That messed a lot of stuff up where you get a lot more 5-year guys. And that's going to go away a little bit after next year's draft. But to stick with Bethune.
Which apparently sucks.
To stick with Bethune, something about him that showed up just in the way they talked about Johnny Holland, like, when the 49ers get a guy they like, their position coaches just keep talking to them. They're like, listen, like, and what Bethune said is like, he was talking to Johnny Holland and it was just, he's like, we weren't even talking about football. Like, we're just talking about life. And anyone who knows Johnny Holland's journey, that guy is just a lovely soul who you can talk to about anything. Like, and so when you get that and Johnny Holland's like, this guy's got something, they're like, 251, absolutely, we're going to go get Johnny's guy. Like, he's got the, I'm going to put it all out there on the field. Mm-hmm. I might be undersized, but that's because I've got a chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
There's something to him.
Listen, you want to talk about a team that has invested in special teams? Add them to the list. Add Cowing to the list. These are guys who, not into the flashy spots. I'm talking
Cowing. That was my number one takeaway.
It could be a great gunner. Cowing could be. I don't think they'll do that with Guerrero. Apologies.
Yep.
But he could be a great gunner. And by the way, like Kingston was kind of a shock pick. We missed that one. Mea culpa. And but between him and Pooney, one of them's going to do well. They're kind of the same thing. So one of them's going to perform. So yeah.
I think Pooney's a little bigger, longer, not as athletic. But yeah, I'm with you. They both have the same sort of.
We're going to find out.
Kind of wherever.
And ultimately, not a single one of these guys is guaranteed of anything. But again, high floor.
Right.
And when you have a high floor, you stand a chance because what kills you isn't, oh, this guy's never going to be a star. Who gives a damn? Right. It's the draft.
And that's
where
they
missed. You're trying to build depth.
That's the whole thing we talked about coming into the draft is this is a massive draft to get guys that can just play and they got guys who it's like, you've seen enough tape. They have enough athleticism where not all of them, obviously it never works out all of them, but like there's a lot.
If there was ever a class that everyone was going to work out and everyone, you'd be like, oh, he's fine. I mean, even Pearsall. Is Pearsall going to be an all pro? I'd actually bet no. I'm as high on Ricky Pearsall as any person on the planet. Is Ricky Pearsall going to go out there and be a competent NFL receiver week one with a chance to really grow into the role in year two and beyond when he has more opportunity? Hell yeah. That is your biggest boom possibility. Maybe Guerrero. That's your biggest boom possibility. And even that's nothing spectacular to the point where people were kind of freaking out about him being taken at 31. But everyone on this team has a high floor. And everyone on this team should reasonably make the squad based on what else we got going on with the roster. They didn't have any backups last year. They didn't have any backups, and now they have backups.
This might be a bleak question, but if you had to bet on anyone out of this draft class to not make the roster, who would it be?
Yeah. To not make the roster?
Yeah.
Kingston? Probably Kingston. But I think they would keep him. I mean, but, yeah. but to be fair, Bethune, I mean, that's an easy answer just because he was the last pick. I mean, it might not work. He might be too slow. He might, right. He gets the, in the NFL, what's between the ears is far more important than it is in college, but he might not have, and that's where, you know, his body does not translate what he clearly has going on between the ears, which is a craziness yep. and also just crazy instincts. He sees the field exceptionally well. He knows yeah. where to be. He does all that stuff. But like, that's great if you have all that, and it could translate at a very high level. A lot of these guys should be better pros than they were college players. That's another thing that the 49ers really like with their schemes and stuff. When they go very schemed specific, you think like a Garendo, he's going to be a better pro than he was a college player because yep. the college game asked for something different than what he provided. You know, this is everyone's so spread out. You're running the whole 53 on the wide. Like, who cares if you can one cut and go? And you're 220 pounds, unless you're playing at a lower conference school, in which case you do play that style. Regardless,
right.
Bethune might end up in a situation where, yeah, he knows
a lot of linebackers too.
Yeah, he knows everything that's going on, and the questions that we had about his body and his athletic ability at the college level are just pronounced even more when he's going up against the best.
And he'll be on the practice squad, whatever.
That's right. Cowing?
My mid before like the last two rounds mm-hmm. guy that I have a little bit of questions, Cowing.
Yeah.
I think there's a route for him to miss the roster. Okay. I don't think it's likely. I think there's enough upside there to feel good about him. And I think the 49ers.
He might not be able to separate in the Niner scheme. He might. Right. It might. I'll say this though. Jed Fish, head coach at Arizona, they ran a very pro style offense. So it's easier yeah. to translate. I mean, if he's not having to do something different, but yeah, no, there's some concern there for sure.
Yeah.
I'd also not say that Pooney might show up and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't look right. Now they'll give him a spot on the roster anyway. Cause again, right. you know, shout out Nick Zekelch. Like
it's true.
There's not a lot of guys that he has to beat and they're not of any yeah. serious quality.
Yeah. Good question. I think this will be a good one this will be our last question before we finish up here. Mm-hmm. Who sees the field more this year, Jennings or Pearsall? What's your feeling on that? I would say Pearsall, but it might go the other way at the start of the year. That's it's also like Jennings is so valuable on third downs. I think, as you spoke to, if they spread the offense out a little bit more, and I think you're right on that, I think it'll be Pearsall. I think Pearsall's going to not get like a ton of snaps, especially early on, but he's going to be in the mix in a way that they really haven't done all that often because they haven't had a lot of guys to just move in the mix. Like Ray,
three different spots, by the way,
right?
He'll be able to play. I think it's Pearsall right. just because if you need someone to spell Brandon Ayuk, well, let's go with Pearsall. If you need someone to spell Juwan Jennings, or if you don't, you know, we need someone who can go a little bit deeper than him on this third down. That's Pearsall. And if Deebo Samuel is off the field, it's definitely Pearsall. So I agree with you that I think Jennings is going to have that role. I think Jennings, especially if they spread out the offense, is going to be even more underrated. They don't have a second tight end. Well, who is their second tight end? It's Juwan Jennings.
Yep.
He's the best run blocker, perhaps, as a wide receiver in the game.
Good point.
And so he's got a spot. But there is a very real scenario that we can all easily play out in our minds where Ricky Pearsall beats him out of his job halfway through the season. And so now he's the number three receiver and also the backup at Z and also the, if we have to, backup at X. So I think it'll be Pearsall. I don't think it'll be by a big margin. And I don't necessarily think that it will be a indictment of Juwan Jennings right. if it is Pearsall.
And I also think the sort of follow-up question and the main people's main concern is like, well, what if Pearsall's not starting? What if he's like not doing it? Like, I don't think it matters. He is a guy, you're going to lose Deebo next year. He's going to be a guy that you can plug and play and you don't have to pay. Like, he's going to be better than, like, that's super, super valuable.
And think about how long it took for them to get Brandon Ayuk to be a competent wide receiver.
Yeah.
It took him 2 years. And they were, I'm sure they thought about cutting his ass if he wasn't a first round pick because Kyle hated him. He couldn't stand
it. That might be an exaggeration, but. They were frustrated by him for sure.
He didn't know how to play wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers and Kyle Shanahan's system. And they're like, we used a first round pick on you. we were going to give you
some. Also, to be fair, that cursed COVID year, so the vibes were all sorts of fucked up.
I'm just saying he turned into something really good.
I agree. And it took him a second.
It takes a year to become a 49ers wide receiver. It took Debo Samuel a year. I mean, a year is probably a stretch. It takes 10 games at the minimum to be a 49ers wide receiver to the level Kyle Shanahan wants you to be a receiver.
But they've also never had a receiver as polished as we believe Pearsall to be.
We're going to find out. I'm very interested to see how fast he can do it. But if he doesn't do it in year one, that's fine because he'll be there for year two.
I agree. Don't,
sell me the stock if you ever want to sell it. That's where I'm at.
I'm with you.
Jake, hell of a draft, buddy. You nailed it. Nobody did better than Jake Hutchinson over here. Nobody.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Hey,
we both killed it.
Oh, something died. I don't know. I don't know if it was us. It was, my soul is gone. I don't know what to do with my time now. Should I read? I watched the Iron Claw the other night. That was depressing.
Well, Shogun's over. It's disappointing. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. I did not like the ending of Shogun, if I'm being honest.
Really?
You liked it?
Because you didn't get a war?
I just thought that it got a little accelerated. I can't believe I'm saying that about like this slow burning drama. But like,
I know you're like, where's this going? Or it's building up to something. And they're like,
let's take 5 minutes and wrap up the show.
Put a little trick on you. The episode. I get that. I also thought it was the most the cinematography, the most beautiful episode they had.
I bought surround sound for it.
I like vibes in my show. I just like silence and like weird cuts and
hot Asian chicks and beheadings. It's like, what more do you need in life?
I'm fine with that.
I can try to get Moose in here, Alex, but I don't know if he'd interrupt as much as he would just look at me like, what are you doing?
My dog has just been a menace since I got home. So
this is probably, by the way, this is probably the last 49ers game day podcast. It's not to say that this is the last podcast for Jake and I, and that's not to say that we should delete anything from the feed. But seeing as we will end up talking a lot of 49ers, but our SEO is garbage, I think a rebrand is in the works.
It's also like when you type in 49ers game day.
We're on page four, and that's not good. That's not good. So we're going to get very... If you want us, you're going to be able to find us really easily. And I got to say this. We had... It's kind of like the...
No, we're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. I promise we're still going to pod. We're just going to rebrand it. We're going to rebrand it. We have an incredible friend of ours who does great design work. And this has been something we've been talking about for a while. Yeah. We cannot thank the sickos who came back enough. Because this thing has started and stopped so many times. Yeah.
Real quick, this is how I felt when I saw Tanner Bordellini go. And this is how I felt when Malik Mustafa got drafted.
That's exactly right. This thing has started and stopped so many times in the last 3-4 years. And that is expressly my fault. And we weren't able to execute the way that we wanted to execute this year because, stomach viruses at daycare and stuff of that nature.
You have a human child. I think that's a fair excuse.
I'm not trying to say it's not a fair excuse. I'm just trying, by the way, totally neglecting her right now. Who knows what's happening? But
she's fine.
Thank you to everyone who came back. And much like Ricky Pearsall, we really got some momentum late in the game. And I just can't say how appreciative we are of our small in numbers but strong in voice audience. And the feedback that we've gotten has just been incredible and very heartwarming. I wouldn't say we've built a community or anything, but the conversations that we've been able to have been just really enriching. I'm a pretty misanthropic dude. I really like this. I really like everyone that we talk to. And
because there's no one as deranged, to talk to. I feel like we're in the right level of slightly curmudgeonly, but also when there's something beautiful enough to make our souls
like a Tanner,
rise just to take. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just get a little hard. I am very excited to see where this thing goes. And listen, it's going to be Niners, Niners, Niners. But there's also some other stuff that Jake and I like to talk about. that we should talk about. And as it is currently branded, doesn't feel appropriate to talk about. So we're going to fix that problem.
Agreed. Agreed. But and to
shout again, out to the sickos.
Seriously, it's, you know, like it's something where it's just nice to have people who are also sick in the head and also ask questions that are like interesting questions and make
insightful. They're doing their work. I mean, I'll take any of you to war over a lot of the people I've been hearing talking about this with real conviction and no knowledge.
And here's the thing. We're too demented to ever change who we are.
That's
it's just unfortunately finished product. So we will probably talk a little bit of Warriors, to be honest, at some point.
Talking about, listen, you know, this sick energy needs to spread like a pandemic. We're coming. All right, let's call it.
I appreciate you, folks.
Do the other stuff. Shout out to the sicko. Shout out to a great draft, everybody. Excited to get started on 2025 tomorrow. All right, bye.